Warning: this episode contains details that some listeners may find disturbing. Summer 1841. On a humid Wednesday, two men stroll along the Hudson River near Hoboken, New Jersey, with a view of New York City just across the water. They pause by Sybil's Cave when something floating a few hundred yards out in the river catches their eye. It's a dead body. A young woman, reportedly with her dress torn and cloth bound around her neck. News quickly spreads that the victim is Mary Cecilia Rogers, known across New York City as the beautiful Cigar Girl. Her mysterious murder will inspire Edgar Allan Poe to write one of the original detective stories, and over 180 years later, the case still remains unsolved. Over that time, detectives, journalists, famous authors, spiritualists, psychics, and conspiracy theorists have weighed in on one of the most notorious murder mysteries of the 19th century. This is a study of strange. Welcome back to the show. I am your host, Michael May. I first became aware of the Mary Rogers story probably back in 8th or 9th grade when I was reading a lot of Edgar Allan Poe. And I wanted to say one quick thing before I dive into the story, which is that it was difficult to research and find the very specific details about Mary's body when it was found. And that's because there was a lot of sensational reporting, not just at the time, but in later years, a lot of rumors and speculation. So in my story today, I'm trying to report what I think are the most authentic pieces of evidence or details that I could find from the time. And if there's anything I don't report or I skip, please give me a shout, astudyofstrange@gmail.com, and let me know what you have found. And let's get right into it. Mary Cecilia Rogers was born in Lyme, Connecticut, around 1820. Her father died when she was young, and Mary and her widowed mother, Phoebe Rogers, moved to New York City, where Phoebe ran a boarding house on Nassau Street. In 1841, Mary was 20 years old, tall, dark-haired, and was considered exceptionally beautiful. She attracted attention wherever she went, and recognizing that beauty would draw customers, cigar merchant John Anderson hired her as a clerk at his Broadway tobacco shop around 1840. Phoebe didn't at first want Mary to take this job, but after Anderson offered a very good salary, Phoebe changed her mind. Allegedly, reporters and businessmen would line up at the cigar shop to see Mary Rogers, and the New York Herald even published a poem about her. When Mary went missing in 1841, it was not the first time that that had happened. On October 4th, 1838, Mary Rogers didn't return home. Newspapers stated that Mary had left a suicide note. However, the note was later proved to be a prank. Mary had simply visited relatives in Brooklyn. Yet the incident shows how newspapers would soon sensationalize her story. In 1841, Mary had become engaged to Daniel Payne, a cork cutter who was boarding at the Rogers house. For all intents and purposes, Mary had a great life and was looking forward to a fantastically lovely future. But then came the fateful Sunday. On July 25th, 1841, Mary told Daniel Payne that she was visiting an aunt, Mrs. Downing, on Bleecker Street and would return later that evening. Daniel Payne said he would meet her at the omnibus stop when she returned. A violent thunderstorm kept Payne from meeting her that evening, but by the next morning, she still had not come home. Payne went and placed a missing person notice in the New York Sun about Mary. I love this aspect of the story because it really gives you some insight into how society, especially in the major cities along the East Coast of America at the time, worked. The newspapers being essentially what social media is now. You weren't just getting your news and your gossip from the newspapers, but you could also post whatever you wanted in them as well. And Payne was using it to make a public post about his missing fiance, and he needed help. While Mary's mother, Daniel, and Mary's friends hoped this was another misunderstanding like a few years prior, when Daniel checked at Mary's aunt's house, Mary was not there, nor had she been there. Mary was really missing. On Wednesday, July 28th, two men, Henry Malin and James Bullard, spotted a body floating near Sybil's Cave in Hoboken, New Jersey. Sybil's Cave, by the way, is the oldest man-made structure in Hoboken. It's not a natural cave, but a place near the water that at the time of Mary's death had a refreshment business or small restaurant. Malin and Bullard found a boat, rowed out into the river, and then pulled the body ashore, and they soon recognized it as Mary Rogers. A former suitor, Alfred Cromelin, confirmed the identity of Mary by a birthmark on her arm. The Hoboken coroner, Dr. Richard H. Cook, performed an autopsy. His testimony was reprinted in the New York Herald, and it describes a horrific scene. Her face was swollen and suffused with dark blood, and there were bruises on her neck. A piece of cloth torn from her clothing was tied around her midsection with a sort of hitch in the back. This material was not fully torn off the rest of her clothing. Some immediate accounts claim that she had a scarf forced into her mouth and that she had a rope tied around her waist. These two details, I believe, are false and likely evolved from the scarf that was around her neck, sometimes described as lace around her neck, and the piece of cloth that was around her waist. What I can surmise from the autopsy is that Mary Rogers had been attacked. She had injuries on her back and shoulders and indications that she had been raped. However, the New York coroner later exhumed the body and did his own autopsy, claiming that she had died by drowning. I can only speculate for that determination, as all the other evidence points to her being murdered and assaulted before entering the water. Investigations led nowhere. To get to what happened next, I'm going to first read from the Boston Post from an article published a few months later. The late investigations and discoveries in relation to the murder of this unfortunate girl have settled two important points. First, the place where she was last seen alive. Secondly, the place where she was murdered. The former place is the little wooden tavern close at the foot of Weehawken Hill, formerly known as Nick Moore's House. This tavern, on a Sunday in fine weather, is visited by numbers of ladies and gentlemen from New York, who usually come there in parties of two and four, no lady ever coming without a gentleman to accompany her. At this house, the visitors usually stay for half an hour to rest and refresh themselves with wine, lemonade, cold cuts, etc., before they ascend to the Weehawken Hill and stroll along the lower road towards Bull's Ferry or Hamilton's Monument at the Dueling Ground. In the afternoon of the fatal Sunday on which Mary Rogers was murdered, she was seen to arrive at Hoboken around 3 o'clock by the ferry boat. Adam, the stage driver, and another young man saw her and recognized her as she left the boat and made a remark to that effect at the time. She was then in company with a dark-complexioned young man, and they left the ferry. They took the road to Weehawken. Adam, the stage driver, also saw the body when found near Sybil's Cave and recognized it at once. On the same Sunday afternoon, the day of the murder, Mrs. Loss, who now keeps the tavern formerly kept by Nick Moore, states that among many others who came to her house was a young lady about the age and exact appearance as Mary Rogers. The young lady reached her house around 4 o'clock in company with a dark-complexioned young man. Mrs. L. took several glasses of liquor into the parlor. Miss Rogers was sitting. The young man rose to hand her a glass of liquor when she said, "I'll take lemonade." Soon after this, she took the arm of the young man and walked out towards the hill, bowing to Mrs. L. This was the last that Mrs. Loss ever saw of the unfortunate Mary Rogers. The poor girl, Mary Rogers, is said by those who assert they saw her went up the Weehawken Hill, strolled nearly a mile beyond the hotel on the top, in company with the young man already mentioned. The rain came on and she took shelter in a small house or tavern near the roadside. And that newspaper account concludes, "All that we really know of Mary Rogers' activities based on witness testimony of the day that she went missing." 2 months after Mary's death, Mrs. Loss's sons, searching for sassafras bark in the woods near their mother's tavern, stumbled upon the likely murder site. In a thicket, they discovered a white petticoat, silk scarf, parasol, and linen handkerchief embroidered with MR. The ground was torn up, branches broken, and a broad path showed where a body might have been dragged to the river. Mary's gloves were found turned inside out, potentially suggesting that they had been ripped off. A year after the murder, Edgar Allan Poe, already famous for the murders in the Rue Morgue, saw an opportunity. In a letter to a Boston editor, he wrote that he had completed The Mystery of Marie Roget, which is a sequel to The Murders in the Rue Morgue, and this story is based on the New York murder of Mary Rogers. He promised a rigorous analysis that examined every newspaper article and indicated the murderer in a way that would spur renewed investigation and interest in this case. And indeed, that did happen. Poe transported the events to Paris instead of New York, and the victim, Marie Roget, worked in a perfume shop. Early in the story, Poe explicitly connects his fictional story to reality, stating, "The extraordinary details which I now called upon to make public will be found, recognized by all readers in the late murder of Mary Cecilia Rogers at New York." I will hold off on sharing Poe's theory for the murder for just a moment.
With fall in full swing, more moments call for more comfort. Mack Weldon's got you covered with comfortable, easy-to-layer clothes designed for cooler days and timeless style. Their new Ace line, inspired by their best-selling sweatpants, combines everyday comfort with long-lasting and confident looks you can count on. For over a decade, Mack Weldon has designed timeless, innovative menswear to help you move through the day with confidence. Not flashy, just classic, always in style, and made from the world's most comfortable performance materials. Fall into comfort with Mack Weldon's Ace collection. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off your first order of $125 or more with promo code MAC25. That's MackWeldon.com, promo code MAC25.
During the investigation, several witnesses came forward, but I think there's two key witnesses to this story. I've already mentioned them, but just for the sake of clarity, here they are again. Adam Wall, he was the coach driver that testified that on July 25th, he saw Mary arrive in Hoboken in the company of a tall, dark-complexioned man. There actually was another man near Adam who saw her as well, and they both saw her walk towards Weehawken Road. The other key witness is Miss Frederica Loss, the proprietor of Nick Moore's house, often called the Black Horse Tavern, and she told reporters that Mary and a dark-complexioned gentleman came into her tavern around 3 or 4 p.m. There are accounts that later that evening, Mrs. Loss heard a frightful screaming from the direction of the woods behind the tavern, and it sounded like a young girl crying, oh God, before being stifled or ending. And Mrs. Loss sort of wrote it off as miscreants and annoying people out and about. And now I'm going to dive into suspects and theories, and I'm going to start with Daniel Payne, Mary's fiancé. Payne had met Mary in 1840, and they had plans to marry, though there are rumors, and I shall say just rumors, that Mary had ended the engagement before her death. And according to a lot of accounts, he was devastated. But newspapers questioned why he did not go see the body immediately when it was found, and some people suspect that he might have killed her for ending the engagement. However, Daniel Payne had an airtight alibi and was cleared by investigators. However, on October 7, 1841, Payne succumbed to grief. He traveled to Hoboken, drank heavily, and purchased laudanum, and drank the whole bottle near where Mary's body was found, killing himself. A note was found on his person which said, "To the world, here I am on the very spot. May God forgive me for my misspent life." Some interpret this as a confession. However, Daniel had an alibi, and most would say that he was just suffering from depression after the death of Mary. Also, his description doesn't match the description of the man seen with Mary when she went missing. And speaking of which, let's talk about this dark-complexioned stranger that no one's been able to identify. There are a variety of theories that tie into this man. But the main theory you hear about when you investigate this case is that Mary potentially died during a botched abortion. And the theory is that this man was accompanying her to an abortionist in New Jersey. There was an accident. She died and they dumped her body in the river. Some people also theorize that the dark complexion man was the abortionist himself. In Edgar Allan Poe's story, he says that this gentleman is a naval officer and had been taking Mary to get an abortion, and that either a fatal accident occurred or that the naval officer murdered her directly. Poe also surmised that this person was Mary's secret lover. And here's a quote from The Mystery of Marie Roget. "We have attained the idea either of a fatal accident under the roof of Madame Duluc, or of a murder perpetrated in the thicket, by a lover, or at least by an intimate and secret associate of the deceased." Poe argued that the hitch from the cloth around Mary's body pointed to a semen, and reasoned that the handle made from Mary's dress was for dragging the body, and that indicated a single murderer. The thinking is that her companion, this dark-complexioned, swarthy gentleman, is a person of interest. And while Poe theorizes he's a sailor or in the Navy, in reality, we don't know who the man really was, but those are really interesting details that Poe clues in on. I'll also mention there was a sailor boarding at the Rogers house who knew Mary. His name was William Keacook, and he was cleared by detectives on the case. The overall theory of a botched abortion is the prominent theory that I've always come across with this case, but there are many reasons that I think you can debunk that, which I'll circle back to next after I talk about the other prominent theory, especially from the time this happened, and that's that Mary was killed by a gang, a group of people. This came about because the autopsy suggested that Mary was violated by, quote, more than two or three persons. Hoboken's Elysian Fields were known for rowdy gatherings, and an anonymous letter sent to police described six rough men taking Mary into the woods. However, that letter may have been fake. Clearly, Mary Rogers was assaulted and murdered. She had been throttled, probably rendered temporarily unconscious. And Cook, the coroner, concluded that there were imprints of a man's thumb on the right side of Mary's neck and fingers on the left. And the lace scarf was found tied around her neck, which may have been actually over her mouth during the attack. Newspaper accounts amplified this gang theory because there were a lot of fears of urban gangs at the time, rightly or wrongly. Here's a quote from the Weekly Standard in 1841. "Halfway between the Elysian Fields and Nick Moore's house, there's a small wooden shanty on the mud bank where liquor is sold and where almost every Sunday, crowds of rowdies armed with sticks arrive in boats. They drink, swear, fight, and sully forth towards the Weehawken Hill, frequently insulting and beating all they meet on their way, besides eating and drinking wherever they can, and then by reason of their numbers and their weapons, refusing to pay for anything." While I don't doubt that there was crime and gang violence at the time in the area, this definitely seems like a pretty extreme article built to sell newspapers, and reminds me that history doesn't change, humans don't change, and newspapers sell well when they sort of stoke fear. This is all to say that I doubt the gang theory myself, and I believe the evidence from the coroner points to one singular attacker. However, it's worth mentioning a gentleman named James Finnegan. In late September 1841, police arrested two gang members in Albany. And these two men named James Finnegan, an associate of theirs, as the attacker and killer of Mary Rogers. The suspects claimed that they were with James and they had all lured her to sail to Hoboken and then assaulted her on the shore. However, this lead collapsed for complete lack of evidence. To end the theory section, I'm going to circle back to the botched abortion theory since this is so prominent. More than a year after Mary's death, another twist emerged. In 1842, tavern owner Frederica Loss, Mrs. Loss, was accidentally shot by her son. There's a bigger story to that that I won't go into right now. Newspapers claimed that she had made a deathbed confession. She said that Mary had come into her tavern with a young physician seeking an abortion, and that the procedure went wrong. And then Loss's son dumped the body in the river while scattering her clothes. The New York Daily Tribune presented this as the final solution to this mystery. This rumor actually reinforced moral panic about abortion and helped drive New York State to criminalize the procedure in 1845. However, Justice Gilbert Merritt publicly denied that Loss had confessed, and the autopsy of Mary Rogers showed no signs of pregnancy. Let me say that again, no signs of pregnancy. Despite that fact, this theory is still the most prominent one today. So what do I think happened? Well, to answer that, I honestly can't do a better job than a wonderful article I read on Skeptical Inquirer, so I'm going to quote a paragraph from that article. So Mary Rogers was not the victim of drowning or a botched abortion, nor of murder following an abortion, nor of a murder-suicide. Neither was she murdered singly or with another by a gang, nor by any one of several suspects considered at the time. The best evidence shows that she was raped and strangled by a single individual, an unidentified young man with a swarthy complexion. And here we are, more than 180 years later, Mary's death still haunts our imaginations, and she's always going to be remembered as the beautiful cigar girl. Lastly, an interesting anecdote. John Anderson, the cigar shop owner that Mary worked for, became a spiritualist. And sure enough, spiritualism was growing very rapidly in the middle of the 19th century. And he would claim that for the rest of his life, he would have face-to-face conversations with Mary Rogers. Though, I'll add, she was never able to convey who her killer or killers were. You've just listened to A Study of Strange. Consider helping us keep the lantern lit, illuminating the unexplained, by subscribing to our Substack. Just head to the support tab at astudyofstrange.com. Until next time, stay curious and stay strange.